You're listening to the Time to Thrive podcast, bringing you proven practical tips and strategies from a leading marketing expert. Are you ready to move your business out of survival mode? It's time to thrive. And now, here's your host, Bethany Meadows.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bethany Meadows, and this is Your Time to Thrive. Today's guest started her first company while working as a QA manager at Coca-Cola. After a year of doing that, she moved on to become a full-time business owner at DC Services. She grew DC for about 10 years before she sold it. And at that time, she established a second and a third company. So she's like a girl after my own heart, serial entrepreneur. Today, she owns and operates DCA Virtual Business Support. Her company provides support for growing businesses for their administrative and creative needs. Welcome to the show, Denise Kagan.
Thanks, Bethany. So delighted to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. We always have so much fun. I came in as a guest on your podcast. Wait, remind me the name of your podcast so everybody knows.
Nurture Small Business.
Nurture Small Business. That's it. So it's a great podcast. Everyone needs to go follow, subscribe, leave a nice review for Denise on her podcast.
Thank you.
So we were talking before we went live, and it turned out that we have this amazing connection thing in common, this experience. It's called the 10,000 Small Business Program that Goldman Sachs supports. And we were both at Babson, and then we started talking about dates and then realized we were there at the exact same time. So this is like a small world moment we're having here.
Absolutely. And not just there at the same time, but literally in the classrooms right next door to each other.
Yes. We probably ate lunch or dinner together in the cafeteria at some point. But it's, you know, we ended up, well, we have a lot of mutual friends as a result of that experience. I can tell you what my experience was with that. I mean, it was like a game changer for me. It really changed a lot of the way I thought about my business and gave me a lot of confidence to think about ways to scale and add additional revenue streams. What did it do for you?
It did the same thing, but maybe in a slightly different way. As we were talking about our growth opportunity there and that being sort of our capstone project, I realized it wasn't a viable one for us. Mm-hmm. It was a great product, don't get me wrong, but we were not articulating it well, so we weren't selling it. And what we decided was like, you know, we have multiple lanes, so we're going to stay in those lanes and just perfect what we do there. And that right there was a game changer for us because we were jumping all over the place. And when you do that, you wind up losing money sometimes. We did.
Yeah. So you just described probably the number one mistake that a lot of business owners make. And that is they think that what they do is for everybody. Mm-hmm. Instead of really niching down into what they do well and who they do it well for. I did a workshop one time in the at a local library here. And it was about 110 business owners in the room. And I asked, you know, who would volunteer to share what they did. And a person volunteered that she makes organic handmade soap in her basement and sells it online. And I was like, well, who's your target audience? And she said, well, everybody, because everybody uses soap. And I'm like, yes, but not everybody's going to pay you $5 a bar for organic handmade soap. So I ask you again, who is your target market? Well, now it looks a little bit different. It's, you know, maybe someone who's more health conscious or maybe has allergies to the chemicals in, you know, store-bought soap and so on. So, and once you understand what that niche looks like, that gives you so much more power in your marketing, right? Your messaging, everything.
Yeah, so, you get clarity.
Yeah. So how did you change your business as a result of that realization?
So one of the biggest things I did was I hired an advisor, and I was like, I need someone who's going to kick me in the butt and say, okay, this is a business opportunity. could be an expansion opportunity. It might not be, but take me through the steps to make me evaluate it. We've stopped jumping around because of that. That was like the biggest thing that has helped us, is just having that a business advisor, keeping me on track. And now it pretty much comes naturally to me. I've even gotten to the point where I'm very comfortable declining clients that don't really sound like a good fit for us. And if you're defining who your clients are, you know, for the marketing purposes, guess what? You know who they are when you do the sales calls.
Right. I know we had no intention of talking about this particular subject when we started, but that's the great thing about doing an organic interview and just letting it go where it goes. Because I really do think this is something that business owners just have a hard time getting. But once they get comfortable with that niche and that very targeted approach to things, that's when things really start to happen for them. One of the things that you're really good at is managing a remote team. I mean, that is something you do for your business, but it's also something you help others do, because you become, you know, the nature of your business is you become a part of another company's team and resource, right? So what are some things, because a lot of post-pandemic and things, a lot of things have changed in business world, and there's a lot more people now working from home or working remote. As a business owner, that opens the door to maybe hiring a resource that I might have otherwise had access to. You know, if I don't have someone with that skill set right here where I live, I can hire that person if they live somewhere else, if I understand how to manage a remote team. So can you give us some insights on how to really interview and get the right person who can work in a remote team environment? Because everyone's not cut out for it.
No, you're right. They are not. So let me first start off with saying is that we are not remote as a result of the pandemic. We've been remote for almost 8 or 9 years now. Right. Okay.
So you were doing remote before remote was cool.
Absolutely. And some of the really awesome things that have come out of the pandemic are just huge leaps and bounds in technology, which we're a very heavily technology reliant organization. And we use it also in our hiring process. So you had asked me, you know, how do we screen for and hire, you know, in this remote culture? Well, it goes back to what you're talking about, your marketing message. You first have to define who, okay? Right. Who do you want? What do they need to do? And then the piece that some business owners don't incorporate in is what about their personality? Okay. And that is directly related to your culture. So some businesses, they love those snarky peoples, those disruptors. And so, you know, that might be the person you're like, give me your best sales pitch, 30 seconds on a video and make it lively. Okay. And you might use a cuss word in there. Okay. I don't try to do those. That's not my style. We look for a very collaborative team. So we ask questions relating to, tell me about a group project. Tell me about a time when you've worked with somebody who was difficult to get along with. And then we keep probing. We don't settle at the surface answer that's given to us, because that usually is a surface answer.
Right. The one that you can practice for. Mm-hmm. Before the interview.
Precisely. And I love that you said that, because so many people, we talk amongst our team, and we call those canned answers. So many people can practice for, oh yeah, I worked with this difficult manager and he's was blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I just was go with the flow and just did my job. So tell me about some of the conversations you had. Okay. That's not something they've practiced for.
Right.
Okay. And if it's still very generic, I'm like, well, how did you feel about that? You know, and we keep going. So how did your supervisor respond to that, or the other person respond to that? Do you feel like the outcome was successful? And you go those layers deep, you find out so much more information, yeah. You know, So that's, so thinking of it holistically, looking at those things, what, who do you need? What type of skills do they have? Of course, their availability. And then you need to talk about culture, and there is culture in remote teams. And then there's some other things as far as, you know, managing them that, that goes into this whole process. We do a working interview. So our process, so we also use technology. I told you that to start with. At EHR, there's something called Jazz out there that I'm aware of. It's an applicant tracking system. I highly recommend it. Both of those are priced appropriately for small businesses. Okay. Usually it's just larger companies like, you know, Walmart and, you know, DuPont that use applicant tracking systems because they're usually pretty expensive. Those are scalable to the size of the companies that we usually work with. So I highly recommend it. What's it's set up like EDDYHR.
So it's EDDYHR. HR. Okay.
And the other one is, I believe it's just Jazz HR.
Okay. I'll go look those up and put the links in the description of the podcast. So if people want to.
Yeah. They're phenomenal. They're set up like a CRM essentially. So if you use a CRM in your system, in your business, you understand the function of it. The applicant goes in, there would be the equivalent of a lead in a CRM. Okay. You track different phases in the hiring process, like you would in the sales process. And you set up various different tasks and workflows. They're pretty easy to automate. Most of them come with support where you can pay an extra, whatever, $500 or whatever it is to get them to set it up. And then there's companies that can help you with it too. But that has been a game changer with allowing us to be more structured and organized and to carry candidates from that are applying to another's. To another workflow, say for instance, if we fill that job or we need to go back to, you know, reopen it.
Well, you mentioned culture, and I, you know, in my world, in marketing agency world, culture and brands kind of shake hands and need to be friends. And what's interesting is that a lot of businesses, A, don't understand their brand, therefore they don't understand their culture. So they don't even know what questions to ask to begin with, to make sure that any candidate that they're hiring actually aligns with their brand values and aligns with their brand morals and their mission of the company and that kind of thing. So for me, I feel like, you know, you've got to go back a few steps and make sure that you have your brand narrative and your brand promise and everything solidified, clarified, so you understand it, and then understand how your brand translates to culture internally. Mm-hmm. Can you give some insights to that? Like what you've seen as far as interviewing and what questions to ask? How do you make sure that you get the right person?
So what we developed in our, first of all, our interview process has gone through numerous changes. So we'll just start with that. You know, it used to be, you know, just a Zoom interview, and then we decide if we want them or not, and we would start them. And that was relatively disastrous. when we were small, it worked a little bit better. Okay. Now that we've gotten bigger, we have way more processes. We have way more clients. That is it's not, it didn't work. So we started doing a phone interview. So on the phone interview, it's some basic questions about skills. Okay. And then we also asked them, you know, what does your perfect work environment look like? If they're telling us, you know, I want 40 hours, I want to sit at my desk from 9 to 5, I don't want to be interrupted, they're not a fit for my company. Mm. We have what's called freedom schedules. The work is dependent upon what the client needs. You clock in and clock out when you want, as long as you meet deadlines. There are some, you know, guidelines around that. Like for instance, you know, most administrative work, if it's client facing, has to be done during business hours. But because we're fractional in nature, one client may only have 1 or 2 hours worth of work a day. So somebody who wants to be in their seat 9 to 5 still is not a good fit for us, even though it sounds like they're ambitious. And that was a mistake we made early on. It's like, oh, this person really wants to work.
Yeah.
But it's not a culture fit.
Interesting. So it's really just as a business owner, when you're interviewing for whether it's a remote position or an in-house position, you really need to understand your brand and mm-hmm. how that translates to your culture, and then devise some questions to help you draw out to ensure that that person actually is a good fit.
Yeah, you do. And the thing is, you need to also start with your job ad. You need to put your, you know, some of your mission and values in there so people understand, you know, our job ad focuses on we support small businesses. Okay. Somebody who has the idea that they want to work in corporate, this should weed them out.
Right. Okay.
Somebody who doesn't understand what small business is, maybe they're a little bit more hesitant, or maybe they prefer, you know, very much client facing things. If they see that it's remote, they might realize that's not a fit for them. Some people very much want to be, you know, that customer service at the desk that's talking to people all day long. And that's not a cultural fit for us either. There is definitely some interaction, right, but it's not all day long if you're like that high touch person that needs to have people with you.
Well, that kind of leads into the next question, which is motivating a remote team. Now, I have team members who are also remote. We try very hard to have in-person meetings every so often, just to create that face-to-face connection. We have regular Zoom meetings, of course, and we probably spend the first 15, 20 minutes of that Zoom meeting talking about our kids and talking about, you know, and instead of just getting down to it, I think for me, that's where I've had to have patience and not be thinking, well, I'm paying all these people to be on this call to talk about their kids. But really what I'm doing is investing in building a team affinity and strength and connection, right? So mm-hmm. I know you have some great ideas around that. So why don't you share some about how you motivate a remote team?
So you literally hit on the two key points that are like the most important is, first of all, create an environment where they can collaborate, talk to each other, learn about each other, create those situations. And whether they are team members, my people are W-2, so, you know, legally we have to pay them for all their time. But some people work with contractors and they make the mistake of thinking, I don't have to pay you for this time. It's just a meeting. It's not deliverables. That's the wrong answer. If you think about it now, we're in the gig culture and a lot of people are working with contractors. If you think about it, if you're devaluing them and not somehow compensating them for the time, maybe it's an increased monthly stipend, or maybe it's a, you know, for the meetings you get X amount. I don't know. But don't think their time is free. That's a great way to demoralize. So ensure that you're paying your people for your time. Allow them to do that small talk, just like we did before the show. Okay. Mm-hmm. Allow them to do that. Allow them to get to know each other. Create opportunities for them to work together. Okay. We do that all of the time. We were cross-training one of my team leaders to do one of our working interviews. And we had a young lady who had come up as an intern. So she did not do the working interview. And I was like, well, you need to be trained on this. So have her do that working interview with you and split it up. Have one person who's has more experience do the second half of it. So they got to work with somebody who wasn't even on their team and give her feedback and help train her. And she's a leader. Yes, mm-hmm. leaders have to be trained, okay? Especially when they're learning something new. So we gave an opportunity to our team members to help train a leader. And it seemed to, all of them seemed to have really good feedback on that. And they love doing that work. You know, likewise, we create opportunities for my creative side of the team and my administrative side of the team to work together. Sometimes it's very natural paths like editing, okay? All of your copy needs to be proofread. All of your images need to be correlated to your social media stuff and made sure that, you know, they match.
Right.
So sometimes it's very straightforward, but sometimes It may be something like, hey, I need a comic strip created, but can you talk to this person because they have some insight on this, and just make a, you know, fun projects. Of course, fun projects that lead towards your business, you know, goals. You know, we don't want to just be creating things. Right. The other thing with, you know, creating culture, when make sure there's enough touch points. Okay. We have, and this starts from our new hires, and we really just instituted this recently. We have, I call it a visual syllabus. Eventually we'll figure out a better name for it, but it lays out your first 30 days and all of the orientation steps. And there we have probably 8 to 10 of them. So it tells the person when they first come in, these are the things you should expect. These are the trainings. These are the people you're going to meet. And this is where they work in the company. So part of that is, you know, motivating people too. What we found, and this is relevant, is that we found that early on we were having, once we figured out the hiring process, the next step was making people stay. Okay. Or not making, making them want to stay.
Yes.
Yeah. Making them want to stay. You know, we're not handcuffing them here. So part of that was, you know, again, it came from feedback on your team. This is part of creating the culture too. We sent a survey to the team. What's the roughest spot in your job? And there were, I think, maybe 8 questions. We limited it to 8 because we didn't want it to take them more than 5 minutes. And we discovered a couple spots where we were really not good at. And I was like, okay, some of these are easily fixed, but it's going to take some time. Creating that new hire orientation that we're doing was actually one of those, you know, and we have experienced so much stability since we put that in place. It's just incredible. Just the shift is just, I'm blown away. You know, it was something that I should have thought of years ago. And like I said, you know, initially we were doing just a Zoom interview and you're hired.
Right. I think over the last, for our company, over the last couple of years, we were doing some remote before, but we were meeting regularly. Like, even if they were working remote, we were still coming together very often, once or twice a week. Now we're much more remote and coming together less. So I found myself wanting to be more intentional about how I made sure that each individual team member felt appreciated and felt recognized for their contribution. So they weren't off in an island somewhere sending work into the digital world and then didn't get any feedback, didn't get any acknowledgement of their contribution. So quarterly I'm trying to do like little appreciation gifts, maybe to the season. Like I just got everybody a monogrammed summer bag, you know, for the beach kind of thing. And then just recognizing them. And then also being able to cast vision for them, because I think that's where I felt like we didn't have, because we were together before, I could do that in person. And now because we're not coming together as often, I wanted a way to do that. So I actually started a GroupMe with everybody in it. And I kind of used that as, hey, I had an idea last night. What do you guys think? Or, you know, here's some insight about why we're doing this particular project or direction that we're going. So that gives me a way of creating that collaboration as well, a different tool, I guess, for that.
Yeah, all those are awesome things. And, you know, I think every business owner should do the gifting at some, whatever frequency that works for their budget and their team. But the one thing I would impress is that culture starts with your job ad. It really does. And that's why I keep going back there. It starts at your job ad, in your interview, in your onboarding process, and then all of those things that you just said as once they're in and established.
Right. Awesome. Well, let's go to those companies that for somehow have made it now through the pandemic without going remote or in any kind of hybrid capacity, or maybe they did because they had to and it was kind of done hilly-nilly or whatever. But I'm sure there's a strategy. If you're thinking about expanding yourself in this way, what would you recommend that companies think about to ensure that they do it well?
The very first thing is probably hire a consultant. But
you called it an advisor earlier, and then a consultant is now. And I would probably say a coach is also a part of that process, right? Because they're kind of this all-in-one ball of someone who's got enough experience that you can bounce things off of that will, you know, call you out if you're lying to yourself about things.
Absolutely. And the reason why I say that is somebody from outside of your business is going to help you figure out, you know, there are many things that need to go into place, mainly processes. You need to make sure your processes are tight. Okay. My advisor wouldn't necessarily be the person to write my procedures. However, she might help me identify them. Okay. So you need to make sure your procedures are in place, because once people are outside of the building, you have to ensure that they have the correct information to do their job. It's not about, you know, micromanaging it. It's right. Really that people need the same information as if you were side by side with them. Okay. So you want to make sure your processes are in place. Then you want to make sure your technology is in place. And that could be anything from, you know, is it going to be computers provided by the company? Is it going to be, you know, bring your own device? You know, what are your tech requirements? If it is bring your own device, what are the tech requirements? What are the internet speeds required? What if somebody lives in an area where the internet speeds, I mean, it's a rural area and they suck. You know, what do you do then? You need to create those policies that address those things. And then you need to also determine what positions realistically can be remote. There's some positions, like for instance, one of the people that went through the same cohort with us, she has a book business. They work in a warehouse. Guess what? About the only functions they can do remotely are probably some sales, some marketing, and some bookkeeping. But everything, the pick, the ship, all of that needs to be done on site. So you have to identify what can be done. And then you need a plan of implementation. And if you've ever noticed what's going on in the banks when they start merging and doing things, they have phases. They run them. I think you mentioned this in our podcast. They do them in sprints. Okay.
Right.
They put one thing in place. They make sure it's working. Then they do the next thing and they make sure it's working. And this is what I would do. Even with a small organization, if it's maybe one or two people, you might be able to do it all at once. But with me, I have a team of 16. If we were not remote and I was going remote, I would do it bit by bit to make sure that what we have in place is working, that we can then, you know, disseminate that to the rest of the team.
Right, right. And not only just figuring out what role can go remote, but making sure you have a person that can go remote.
Right. And that they have access to everything.
That no way would they be able to go remote. They're way too ADD. And, you know, there would be laundry and whatever, and they wouldn't get anything done if they were remote. And they know that about themselves too. So, well, this has been great. I mean, this is like a great insights in terms of remote. Tell us how people can get a hold of you. If you're looking for, someone's looking for a virtual assistant for their business, how can they find you?
You can find me most easily from my website. It's dcavirtual.com. Contact page there's a form. There's also a button. You can literally just click and go, hey, I want to talk to you now and schedule a time to talk to me. And then of course, all of our social links are on there and you can reach me through any of those. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn. Yeah, we're there.
Pinterest. I love it. We're on Pinterest too. Thanks. I love it.
Pinterest is great. I like it.
Well, thank you, Denise. I enjoyed our time together, and I'm sure our audience got a lot, especially those that are thinking about remote.
Yes, and I appreciate you having me here.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Time to Thrive podcast, check out our other resources for business owners and entrepreneurs at timetothrivemembership.com. Running a business is more challenging than ever before. Time to Thrive is where you can get marketing training, group coaching, and community support. Visit timetothrivemembership.com to learn more.